Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's St. Patty's. To all my Irish listeners out there, good day. That was probably a lousy accent, but I think you get the message. So, another... I mean, what? No week is really different than any other week, except they seem to be exponentially compounding and accelerating in terms of news. Well, what we're going to do this morning, I'm going to cover a bunch of short subjects for you very quickly. And, of course, I'm going to have my little story for you. And then we're going to get into the meat and potatoes. I started it last week, and that is the tactics of the left. Last week, I kind of gave you a broad overview. And I'm going to refer you. I got emails coming in already. Must have been my Irish accent or lack thereof. But I'm going to refer you to the articles I posted under both treason and constitution last week. And I've posted more treason and constitution articles this week. It has to do with the tactics of the left. And listen, there's lots of other great articles too. Make sure you see the articles under violent left, unholy alliance, that is the alt-left and Islamists. But those are the two main categories, last week and this week. We just don't have enough room to carry all of last week's over to this week, but you'll find them fascinating. I think the producers got a few of them on both weeks on the website, on therightsideradio.com. And some of them particularly related to Rhodesia, South Africa, Maxine Waters, reparations, and what's going on with the taking of private lands as the alt-left takes control of those countries using racial division. I think you'll find it scary, too. Particularly when the rhetoric that preceded what's going on in Africa and other countries, that rhetoric is existent in the United States. And I have a quote from Maxine Waters in last week's show. My suggestion is, if you have not listened to last week's show, you listen to it. That last hour or so is the segment. And this is going to be about a four-part series I'm doing this week and probably over the next two, depending upon what crazy stuff might occur elsewhere. But there's a whole bunch of other stories going on, and we're going to cover them very quickly up here up front. We have a little bit I'm going to tell you about the economy, which nobody is sharing with you. Particularly jobs and the fact that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we're going to have inflation because there's not enough workers and the immigration. And let me bring you the story behind the story, if I may. We're going to be going over very quickly, the latest revelations in the treasonous web of deceit at the State Department, DOJ, and FBI. I'm going to be giving you some more examples of FBI failures, which the press doesn't seem to be covering whatsoever, because it's been kind of it's a litany of failures now. And the more we get into the treasonous political shenanigans of the higher-ups in the Obama FBI and the Obama DOJ and the Obama State Department, it's no wonder that the poor guys on the street are having their hands tied on investigations. I mean, there's one story I'm going to bring you this morning that you're just going to shake your head, and it has to do with Las Vegas. Remember Las Vegas, right? 58 people were killed, more than 500 wounded, some of them paralyzed. I mean, really, you know, life-altering wounds and injuries. And we still don't have any answers from our FBI. Well, let me give you a little behind the scenes this morning on why we don't have answers from our FBI. I think it'll open your eyes. And this is from leaks from the actual FBI agents on the ground who are completely fed up with the nonsense that's going on at the FBI and with the Las Vegas investigation, which they happen to be part of. And we're going to talk a little bit about, just very shortly, because, you know, really talking about Hillary is a waste of time and breath. But talking about Hillary in the context of how the left really feels about America and us, you know, all us bubbas, middle America, flyover country, the red states, you know, the people who make the country work, how they really feel. I'm going to give you another demonstration, and it ties right in to this overall tactics of the left and where they're really going, their concerted game plan. I'm going to review those very quickly for you again. We're going to go into detail, which we were unable to do in the last show just due to time constraints, on several of them. I mean, it's going to take 3 or 4 shows to really go through this, tie it all in a big package for you so you can see what their plan is, what the tactics that they're implementing, which you'll recognize as I list them off and as I describe them, what their tactics are, and what their end goal is in the employment of these tactics. I mean, this is really big picture stuff. The left is smart. They are well capitalized by treacherous and treasonous people like George Soros and others. And they have a plan. And they have an end plan. And they have a goal. You need to understand what that is so you can recognize it, you can defend against it, and you can do your part to make sure they never achieve it, I might add. And we're going to talk a little bit about the new tax law. I got several emails, and folks, I don't want to tell you I'm a financial wizard. I'm sure as hell not a tax wizard. So I dug up some I think, answers to some of the questions I received. I don't. I'm flattered that you folks are asking. But trust me, there's better sources of information out there. Nonetheless, what I have for you this morning will certainly be some interesting tidbits in the new tax law, which are kind of emerging. You know, the new tax law was about 1,000 pages, so it, in and of itself, although it simplified some things for many people, you couldn't really call it a reform measure which made the tax code less complicated overall. So, without further ado, let me tell you my story for this morning. So, this has to do with being able to rely on people. And I have all sorts of people who do all sorts of things for me. I have folks who work part-time and full-time on ranch hands, there are contractors that come in and do this, that, and the other. There's a host of contractor types who come in and do special projects. And then I have kind of a staff, if you will. And we have people who do books, and we have people from the publisher who are great senior publisher assistants, et cetera, who just do a fabulous job on all the book stuff. In fact, the only person who's not doing a fabulous job right now is the author who's behind. But that is yet another tale. And then I have some folks who kind of do administrative work. And one of the things I've noticed over a long career in land and ranching and business is that there's not a lot of people out there you can truly rely on. Have you noticed that? There's not a lot of people you can truly rely on. I mean, some of those people you can't rely on try, but just don't have the ability. And some of those people that you can't rely on, you can't rely on because that's just who they are. So in the last few months, I've had several folks, one a part-time ranch hand, who I thought we treated exceedingly well, and that person just couldn't seem to, you know, get on it, get off it, show up when they were supposed to, take care of whatever list of projects had to be done from this or that or the other thing. And trust me, on a ranch, there's always, I mean, the projects are endless. They seem to multiply by themselves every day. To make a long story short, this particular person, I gave them some projects to do. And I went away for a couple days, had some book stuff I had to do, got back. None of the projects were done. And I couldn't get a call back, and they didn't show up again. And I've since gotten, you know, different assistants. And while that's not much of a story, it ties into, also in the last few months, a person who's been helping me with some administrative stuff. And there were a number of things that occurred over 3 or 4 months. They had a lot of stuff, other stuff going on, and they became more and more forgetful, and there was this problem in getting XYZ done, and this problem in getting ABC done, and so on and so forth. And in the end, they decided they didn't have the time to work for us, and actually sent somebody else out to tell me that they had resigned. And that's been about a week, and I'm still waiting for all the stuff to get to me that they were paid to do to begin with, so I don't have to pay somebody else to redo it, you know, reinvent the wheel. And although this is, not, once again, this is not much of a story like I usually share with you, it does tie into the overall show, because we're all in the same boat. Not only do we have people that we deal with in day-to-day life, on a personal level or a business level or whatever, that, you know, we just can't rely on, but all of us collectively are now at a point, and this is really what we're kind of talking about this morning, where we can't rely on the government. I mean, most of us knew that already, but there were certain things we thought we could kind of rely on. I mean, we could rely on a justice system that was pretty much fair and equal, had its problems, but pretty much fair and equal. We could rely on a federal law enforcement agency, the FBI, to, you know, find the crooks, find the terrorists, take appropriate proactive steps to make sure bad stuff didn't happen to innocent Americans. And we could kind of rely on, should we say, people in the government, at least in some areas of the government, wanting to, even if their hands were tied and they found the situations difficult, wanting to look out for the welfare of the people. And we certainly, up to just a few years ago, in fact, Barack Obama time, when fraudulent voting became prevalent, we thought we could rely pretty much, you know, with some exceptions, on the sanctity of one person, one vote. Only American citizens get to vote. I mean, there were just some basic fundamental things, despite the fact you didn't trust the government as a whole, that you could still rely on. And one of the things that I note is occurring, and I don't know whether it's just, you know, the particular situation in this localized area, but people seem overall less reliable right now. And the government, those few bastions of trust we had remaining, seems completely unreliable. And I'm not here to pontificate or to dovetail those two dots for you, but I will throw out a thought. And it kind of ties in with what the left, one of the tactics of the left, which is to undermine our faith, our family, our Constitution, and our belief in our own system. In other words, our trust in the basic institutions of American life. And I've been wondering here this last week or so, given these situations on the ranch, I've been wondering if there's not a correlation. Is it possible that our dwindling trust and respect, even for those few remaining pillars of government that we thought pretty much functioned most of the time, in a pretty much most of the time fair and equitable manner, as we have become jaundiced in that view, is it possible that all of us are a little bit less reliable? You know, culture flows from the top. The slimy activities of the FBI flowed from McCabe, who we're going to talk about tonight, this morning flowed from Comey. At the Justice Department, they flowed from Loretta Lynch and Bill Orr and other, Sally Yates. And, of course, the slime and the treachery and the devious untruths flowed to those outfits directly from the administration. Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett. In other words, culture flows from the top no matter how big or small the deal, no matter how big or small the operation. So I throw that out this morning just for you to think about. We might discuss it more in the weeks to come. All right, let's talk about, shall we, very quickly, tax. Now, here I got a bunch of questions. So I actually went online, did some research, and a lot of these answers are from the Kiplinger tax letter. So rather than mention the names of the 10 or 12 emails I got, let me just try and answer their questions, because actually their questions were great, and the answers are kind of fascinating, and it may help a lot of you who are listening, at least in some respect. So home mortgages. As you know, the interest on mortgages has been limited under the new tax law. However, here's the rest of the story. The limitations are on your first $750,000 of new debt on either a first or second home or on a rental property. In other words, $750,000 of mortgage debt. However, if you had a mortgage of up to $1 million or mortgages up to $1 million prior to December 17, 2017, you can keep deducting the interest on the entirety of those mortgages. Really important for a lot of you, I'm sure this will be interesting. Starting this year, you may no longer deduct. You can for 2017. We're just talking about 2018 now. You can no longer deduct interest on a second mortgage on a home. You can't deduct interest on a HELOC. And I know lots of people who take out seconds on their homes to pay for college or to pay for home improvements. It doesn't matter what you use it for. Even if you put it back in the house to put it on an addition, remodel the kitchen, whatever, that is no longer deductible. I didn't know that, and I found it kind of fascinating. The medical expense deductions are actually better than they used to be. This was a question I got from a gal in Maine, believe it or not. And they've actually increased those from 10% from 7.5%. I found that pretty interesting too. I got another question from Mississippi, of all places. The tax rates on capital gains, you buy a piece of property or an asset, doesn't matter what it is, for $10 and you sell it for $15, and you own it for more than a year, you have a long-term capital gains of $5 in our little example. That long-term capital gains does not change, except it goes up if you are making $425,800 if you're single, and $479,000 if you're filing jointly with somebody else. It goes up to 20%. Below that income level, capital gains is 15% for dividends and long-term capital gains. So another interesting little stitch, shall we say, in the tax law. You know, we'll probably be talking about some interesting little things that people discover here for at least a year on this law. College savings plans. Got another question from Texas on this. According to Kiplinger, 529, whatever they are, I don't know, folks, 529 college savings plans are enhanced so that you can distribute out of those plans up to $10,000 tax-free per student. So if you have five kids in college, $50,000 a year, you can give them to pay tuition for elementary and secondary education. So that's kind of a cool deal for those of you who have kids in college or about to go. Now, businesses, this is kind of cool. And I talked about this when I did my whole deal on the tax law, which I think was back in January somewhere, or December maybe. If you put in tax in the search bar, it'll come right up. You can listen to it. And I went into it in pretty good detail, although I didn't have these little tidbits and had not been asked the questions. So if you own a pass-through business, you know, you own a sub-esc, you're a carpenter, you're a plumber, you're... attorneys are accepted, by the way. Certain service industries are accepted, so check with your... In fact, you should check with your CPA on all this stuff. I'm just giving you some hints on what to check on. But small businesses are almost always pass-through businesses. Okay, if you don't have what's called a C-Corp, where all the money you make or lose stays in the corporation, doesn't flow out to the shareholders unless you do dividends and all that kind of stuff. If you have an LLC, you have a sub-S corporation, you have a partnership, all that kind of stuff, that's a pass-through small business. And I don't think I need to give you limits on that, because very few of us would have a business that would not qualify as a small business pass-through. But you will be able to deduct 20% of your qualified business income. That's a pretty big deal. It's kind of like, and once again, you got to check, every taxpayer is different, folks. Every business is different. Check with your CPAs or your tax advisors. But in a general sense, let's say your business makes $100,000, which in effect for tax, whether or not you get the cash, passes through to you. Well, $20,000 of that $100,000 is tax-free under the new tax law. It's like an extra $20,000 gift for small business owners. Not a gift, but a tax break for small business owners. So, you know, small business, owning your own business, besides the fact it's a lot of work and it never ends, is very satisfying for those of you who kind of want to be your own boss. And those of us, like me, who nobody would employ because, you know, they'd wind up firing me in about a day, I'm sure. So I thought that was pretty interesting. The write-off for business losses on individual returns is now capped. So if you are an individual, you're not operating as a pass-through business, but you have some type of business loss, if you have a loss that exceeds a $500,000 threshold for couples or $250,000 for single filers, anything over that, you can't deduct anymore. It's kind of a big deal, really, if you think about it. However, what you can't deduct in the current year, you can carry forward for future years. So let's say you have a $600,000 loss. You know, you went out and bought something stupid, and you bought it for $1 million. I'll just take a number. And you sold it for $400,000. You have a $600,000 loss. And there's other things that enter into it. I'm just talking stratospheric here. In the year that you sold it, assuming you're filing with your wife or your husband or whatever, in the year that you take this loss, you can write off $500,000 of that loss, and the other $100,000 you can write off next year. And let's see, there was one other thing here too. And I talked about this when I gave you the really in detailed kind of overview of the tax law right after it passed. You can now, let's say you want to go out and buy a new truck for your business, or a new Bobcat for your business, or a new drill if you're an oil guy, or a new X-ray machine if you're a dentist, or whatever it happens to be. Before now, if you wanted to depreciate it, in other words, you know, depreciation comes off your taxes each year, but then in the end, you have to kind of pay tax on that depreciation when you sell the asset. So in the end, it all catches up to you, but it's a nice tax break in between. Well, now, instead of having to write the stuff off over 5 years, You can write it off in the year you buy it. So if your new business needs, if your little business needs a truck, and you go out and buy a $20,000, you know, 2015 truck, let's say, you could write off all $20,000 this year. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, if you're thinking about revamping your equipment, replacing your equipment, you know, or buying other assets for your business, and I'm sure there are some excluded assets. Again, talk to your tax people. You can go out there and basically the government's paying about 40 or 50% of the cost when you get all said and done. In other words, if you buy a $20,000 truck for your contracting business, let's say, you can write the full $20,000 off. And let's say you're in the 39% bracket because your contracting business is doing really well. The government just paid basically 40 cents on the dollar for your purchase of that truck. Now, one of the things to keep in mind is this applies to all equipment put into service after September 27th, 2017. This is a little quirk I didn't know. So if you bought this new truck on September 28th, 2017, you can actually get the benefit of that 100% write-off now. However, this whole provision, this 100% write-off when you buy assets and equipment and that kind of stuff, is temporary. It will end in 2022. Now, that's still 4 years from now, but it's something to keep in mind. Because if you do have to replace equipment, if you do have to buy new equipment, which almost any business does, whether it's expanding or whether it's expanding, I'm getting emails already here, whether it's expanding or contracting, you probably want to do it when you get 100% bang for your buck in the year that you buy it. All right. That's all we're going to do on taxes. Everybody breathes a sigh of relief. I mean, trust me, that's the driest part of this show, folks. And this show is going to rock because I got so much to share with you. You just can't believe it. Okay. One of the things you've probably heard, let's talk about inflation, economy, and jobs real quick, which also then ties into immigration, which is one of the things we're going to go into in depth as we get into the tactics of the left in the last half of the show. So all these economists, most of which are morons, I'm sure you figured out, all these economists are going, oh my God, we're going to have inflation and wages are going to skyrocket because there's not enough workers and blah, 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 blah. Well, if you've been listening to me for any time, and many of you may know this independently of this show, we have a thing called the participation rate, which was reached its worst status under Obama that it had ever been. And basically, making it real simple, the participation rate is they take all the people that are able-bodied and of working age that could work, and then they figure out how many of them are not working over and above the unemployment rate. And the key they use to separate those two figures, those that are unemployed and those that are able-bodied but not working, is simply are they looking for work? To make a long story short on this, the participation rate is getting better. And that's because there are gobs of people who've been sitting on the sidelines during Obama's sorry tenure in all sorts of ways. We're going to be getting into that in part here in a little bit too. And last month there was like 800,000 people that kind of came out of the shadows who had not been looking for work who entered the labor market. So despite the fact that 313,000, which is a huge chunk of jobs, were added, and wages did go up a little bit, which is great, because they didn't go up at all under Obama. They did not skyrocket. The inflation didn't take off like all these people were wailing and crying about, because we have a huge supply of people still sitting on the sidelines that can enter the labor force. And immigration ties into this too, because you know, many of the immigration proponents, illegal immigration proponents, talk about, oh, we need these people and nobody else is going to do the work. And if we don't do this, we're going to have skyrocketing inflation because we're not going to have enough people to fill all the positions. You've heard all the crap. Nonsense. We could stop immigration, period. And while certain industries might be adversely affected temporarily, there'd be no adverse effect whatsoever because we have a huge reservoir of ready, willing, and able workers, not counted in the unemployment rate, who have been sitting on the sidelines and are now beginning to enter the job market again. Let me give you some Federal Reserve numbers. Number one, in February, 800,000 people came back into the job market. They came out of the, should we say, participation rate bracket and into the looking for employment bracket. There are two, this is Federal Reserve numbers now, 206.6 million prime working age people in the United States. Of those people, only 82% are in the workforce, that is, either employed or looking for work. In the late 90s, the percentage of the people in the workforce was closer to 84.5%. That's 2%, folks. It doesn't sound like much, but 2% of 206 million people in the prime working age is like 4 or 5 million people. So there's 4 million people at least, just going back to the 90s, which is the last time we started to see this kind of economy, at least on the surface. Remember, there are some structural problems underneath this economic icing, which I've talked about. For those of you who didn't hear that show, go to Canaries in the Economic Mine. Just type that in the search bar, listen to that show. I think you'll be shocked, actually, because it's the real story behind the economy, not just the icing stuff that you hear about. But there's 4 million people, at least, out there in this pool of ready, willing, and able-bodied workers that can enter the workforce and still be in line with historical data. So we got enough folks sitting out there in the shadows that have not yet come back into the workforce to basically take care of another 4 to 5 million new jobs without any upward pressure on wages or upward pressure of any magnitude on wages. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And you can appear really, really, really smart if you get into that discussion with one of your friends. Right? You bet. All right, let's talk about the special election that was held in Pennsylvania. So as of this broadcast, Saccone, the Republican, is down by 627 votes. I believe all the absentee ballots have now been counted in the several counties that were late. However, the provisional and military ballots have not yet been counted. So that race still isn't called. In addition, and this kind of gets into part of what we're going to be going on later in terms of the tactics of the left, there's now reports surfacing of irregularities in voting machines. Why don't I use the technical term, irregularities in voting machines. How's this? Voter fraud because Democrats tamper with voting machines. Okay. I did a whole show on voter fraud about a year ago. Put voter fraud in the search bar. You can listen to all the shows I've done on it. But I told you in that show that George Soros, the wealthiest lefty of the lefties and a really bad guy, George Soros owns 17% of the two companies that manufacture the bulk of voting machines, electronic voting, in the United States. You know, that's kind of a recipe for disaster, don't you think? I mean, we've seen what Democrats do on a whole range of issues. The ends justify the means, right? Saul Alinsky. And we've seen them literally extol voter fraud. We watched the President of the United States, Barack Obama, basically say, yeah, you know, if you're legal and you vote, you know, nobody's really going to know. You can Google that up, by the way, and listen to him say it yourself. Of course, given his his un-American stint and his hatred of the Constitution, I think that he is not having, look, George Soros has billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. I'm sure he can come up with the $10,000 that it would take for some programmer to reprogram these machines, because it seems that a number of voters in Pennsylvania District 18, where the special election was held between Saccone, the Republican, and Lamb, the Democrat, a number of Republican voters are complaining that when they pushed the tab for Saccone, or they pushed the vote party line for Republican, it came out for Lamb or the Democrat. So that's all being investigated. And then, of course, and we're going to talk more about that tonight as part of our employment of tactics of the left on many levels, we have also found out that there are at least 100,000 registered to vote illegal aliens in Pennsylvania. And the Secretary of State's office, kind of like the national, kind of like the federal one, is Democratic. And several lawsuits have been filed to get these voter rolls and purge them, and the Secretary of State is dragging their feet. You know, the MO always seems to be the same, right? They cheat and conceal, by they, meaning the left. They cheat and conceal. Then they deny and won't admit. And then they stall, lose, destroy the evidence that's being sought to prove a point to correct a problem. Have you noticed that MO anywhere, you know? The Mueller investigation, the Hillary investigation, Benghazi, and of course, the Pennsylvania Secretary of State and 100,000 illegal registered voters. I'm going to give you actually some examples of what these investigators have found and the folks who are bringing the lawsuit. By a group, I might add, that is headed excuse me, by a former Department of Justice prosecutor who had had enough and got out of the Department of Justice. We can learn several things in this special election. Whether Saccone pulls it out, whether there's lawsuits, and personally, I think it's going to be a while before this election is decided. I think there's going to be a recount. I think there's going to be lawsuits. I think the illegal alien voting question is going to come into play, you know, when you're separated by 627 votes. I think the counting of provisional ballots, the review of absentee ballots, the voting machine problems that have come to light, all this is going to be litigated. So it's possible that you wouldn't have a congressman from Pennsylvania 18 seated before 90 days from now, which is when that district no longer exists because of Eric Holder's lawsuit in Pennsylvania trying to force redistricting, which he's doing in 20 states, along with Barack Obama, which is all part of the tactics of the left, which we're going to be getting into in more detail here shortly. But one of the things that Republicans can take away from this election, conservatives, forget the party, one of the things that conservatives can take away from this election is, number one, the Democrat lied through his teeth and pretended he was kind of a moderate Republican. Now, the day after the election, after he thinks he's won, he's already kind of spewing Pelosi's lines when during the election he said that he wouldn't listen to Pelosi and that they needed a new Democratic leader. So you can see how quickly that story fell apart. And his positions on pro-life, abortion, etc. also seem to have rapidly metamorphosed into something opposite from what he said like just a couple days ago. But that, folks, is going to be the story of 2018. You're going to have Democrats who are running and pretending to be what they are not, because the Democratic Party is hard left. There is no room for centrists in the Democratic Party of today. You are either a raging alt-left whackball, or you are not in the Democratic Party. I'm here to tell you. Saccone, the Republican candidate, I don't know if you saw him on TV or whatever. Listen, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's a decent conservative. I'm sure he knows what he's doing. But, he had no oomph. He had no poof. He had no you know, he was just kind of flat. Whereas the Democratic candidate, Lamb, was younger, vibrant, you know, not frumpy looking like Saccone, and much more energetic in his delivery. So one of the things we can take away from this is that we need way better candidates. Because, you know, in the end, people vote for people. I mean, look at Obama, who incredibly got elected that second time. Obama got elected because people simply liked him more than they liked Romney. Never mind the fact, you know, he's treasonous. He is the worst thing that ever happened to this country, I think, ever. Ever. I mean, everything that's going on today is a result of the poison pills he put in the system. Whether it's Obamacare, whether it's degradation of the military, which we now have to spend $80 billion a year that we don't have to upgrade because we didn't keep it up. You know, whether it's these rancorous and vitriolic and screaming and yelling over illegal immigration and the attack on constitutional law. Whether it's left-wing judges. We're going to be talking about that here in just a little bit. Left-wing judges. This is all part of the plan of the left, part of their tactics, folks. Whether it's left-wing justices, judges that Barack Obama appointed who exceed their authority, rewrite laws as they see it, and then try and impose like nationwide bans and injunctions which far exceed their authority. All this stuff, is employed by the left. And it is critical that we get more votes in the Senate. Thank God, you know, some of these, I'm sure McCain will be retiring. Jeff Flake, gag me, Jeff Flake, who, by the way, this is pretty interesting. It came out over the last week, and I might have an article posted last week or this week, I forget. Jeff Flake is a good friend of Obama. Who would have known? He has a picture of Obama and him hugging each other on his desk. And we wonder why Jeff Flake is a flake, the senator from Arizona. Why he's an anti-Trumper, a never-Trumper. Why he's for open borders. Why he's against the tariffs. I mean, I can go down the list. The guy's a Democrat. And he's best buds with Obama. Pretty amazing. And no coincidence, I might add. So it's critical that we add people to the Senate. It's critical that we keep the House, even if it's by one vote. Very important. Do not count on Democrats like Connor Lamb, who pretended to be what he was not, to suddenly form this conservative Democrat, blue dog Democrat caucus in Congress that's going to vote with the Republicans at least some of the time. It's not going to happen, folks. It's not going to happen. So, one of the things that you need to start doing, and I'm going to start doing, is I'm going to be starting to be posting places you can contribute to various conservative candidates around the country. And that's going to be posted under politics. And look, budget $50 a month. For those of you who can afford more, budget $100 a month. I'm not even going to tell you which candidates, unless something really comes up, to send them to. But send $10 to 10 candidates each month from now to November. I mean, that's $100 a month. Let's see, what do we got? We got March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. 6 months. If you send $100 a month to a number of candidates, not to each, but $10 each, $20 each, whatever you're going to do, is some of you like other is like McSally, who's running, I believe, in the Dakotas? I mean, she rocks. Colonel in the Air Force, fighter pilot. I mean, she's great. If you like her, send her $30. Send another guy $10. But get involved, folks. Get involved. And I know that it's discouraging. You know, these Republicans just don't get it. I mean, it's tough to get excited when you see people like Jeff Flake tearing down Trump, when you see these never Trumpers going through their ridiculous dance, when you see like this omnibus spending bill that's coming up that's supposed to be passed by March 23rd or the government will shut down, blah, blah, blah. It's being put together because we control the House and we control the Senate. It's being put together by McConnell and Ryan. And from what I've been reading, I mean, I'll withhold final judgment till we see it. But it includes funding for Planned Parenthood, another $500 million. Remember, Planned Parenthood, the president spoke at the Democratic National Convention for Hillary Clinton. They contribute, by their own admission, $20 million a year to alt-left Democrats. Yet the Republican Congress is going to continue to fund them, never mind the moral question of what they do, never mind the sale of baby parts, the abortion, never mind all that. I mean, that is kind of breathtaking. This omnibus bill supposedly still has Obamacare subsidies in it. Like, what's up with that? Obamacare's done. You know, as a little sidelight, I have a very good friend over in Salt Lake. And that family, after paying like $500 or $600 or $700 a month after government subsidies for Obamacare. So we're talking, you know, $600 a month, call it $7,200 last year in premiums. And they use some insurance services, but they just figured out their taxes, and they actually contacted me. Because they make more than $42,000 a year, think about this, because they make more than $42,000 a year, the government is slapping them with basically a tax, a penalty, even though they had Obamacare and paid $7,200 in premiums on their own. They're slapping them with a tax in the amount of the subsidy that they got of about $2,700. I want you to think about that. And their policy is nothing to jump up and down about. It doesn't pay everything. It's a 20%, you know, copay up to X amount. I mean, I asked them the questions. It has a big deductible on it. I mean, Obamacare's a wreck, but the Republican Congress in the omnibus spending bill still has Obamacare subsidies in it. Boy, you know, sometimes you just scratch your head. And this omnibus deal supposedly has some kind of money in for gun control legislation. Like, what's up with that? And then the bill has some kind of tax, a federal tax, which is going to be imposed on internet sales. So in addition to state, for instance, if I buy something on the internet here in Wyoming, Wyoming does get its state tax, depending upon who the vendor is on the internet. But in most cases, you know, the 4%, whatever the sales tax is here, is it tacked onto the bill. Well, this is going to be a federal sales tax. And supposedly it's going to be pretty hefty. I mean, I thought the Republicans were like, you know, the party of less spending and lower taxes. Instead, we're going to have a $1 trillion deficit. I mean, listen, the Republicans are kind of in a box because they have virtually no majority in the Senate. And at least three of their 52 votes are completely unreliable because they are never Trumpers and basically Democrats, McCain, Collins, and Flake. So I understand, you know, there's some jockeying you have to do. But, you know, please, really. Anyway, all these things are when conservatives like myself see this kind of crap, it dampens my enthusiasm. It really does. But my theory is that our enthusiasm is dampened most by, so far, up to tonight, or last night, I should say, the firing of McCabe by Sessions, the second in command of the FBI, one day before his one. I told you about this in previous shows. In fact, I think I was the first one in media to even bring up this pension. His $1.8 million pension is gone. I mean, there's probably going to be a lawsuit or two over it, but it's toast. Because FBI folks do not have the same protections as the rest of civil employees. Kind of interesting. So one day before he's supposed to, quote unquote, officially retire at the age of 49, on our tax dime for $1.8 million, after costing us hundreds of millions of dollars in all sorts of failed investigations, he's fired because the OPR, the Office of Personal Responsibility at the FBI, in a really rare move after reading the Inspector General's report, determined that he misled and lied about a host of matters. We'll know what they are when we get the IG report. But let me tell you, for this to happen, it has to be really serious. And Sessions himself fired him. And I really think they're starting to see some accountability. Because this is the tip of the iceberg, I hope, folks. I mean, I don't care that McCabe served for X amount of years. You know, if you had served in the military for 20 years and you retired with, you know, you were decorated war veteran, you had your pension, I mean, you know, you were hot military stuff, and you went out and shot somebody, you murdered somebody, you'd have to pay the piper. I mean, maybe you get a slightly lesser sentence because of your past work for the country, but you got to pay the piper. And McCabe committed crimes, along with a host of other people. We're going to be talking more about McCabe here in just a little bit. But the big point I wanted to bring out is if Trump and the Republicans want to motivate their base, number one, they got to stick to their promises. Number two, they got to stop screwing around with funding Planned Parenthood and that other crapola they got going. But most importantly, they got to make the chickens come home to roost for the treasonous, illegal, and felonious behavior of a whole bunch of people. Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, I keep calling her Susan Rhodes. I guess two liars are interchangeable. Ben Rhodes, Samantha Powers, Comey, McCabe, Orr, Strzok, Page, Jarrett, and maybe even, if we're really lucky, Obama. And of course, there's Lynch, and there's a host of other people. Sally Yates. I really think if conservatives start seeing some accountability, start seeing an equal application of the law, because I happen to know that, personally speaking, I can't tell you how pissed off and frustrated I get to know that these people committed felonies and unconstitutional acts in violation of the basic laws, never mind the ethics and the morality and American values. I'm talking about the basic laws of the United States. This mayor in Oakland who forewarned illegal alien criminals. I mean, that type of thing. It pissed me off no end. And you know what pissed me off even more than their acts or lack of acts, because they're the left and they have their list of tactics, which we're going to get to here very shortly again. It pissed me off because it seems that they get away with it. I mean, they arrogantly, in your face, break the law because they think that their poo-poo doesn't stink. And it'd be nice to see some stink. And if the Republican Party wants to motivate Republican voters, if the right wants to motivate the conservative hordes, then let's see some accountability in government. It's very disconcerting to vote for people to put into a government you no longer have faith in. That tends to dampen one's enthusiasm. Now let's talk about the revelations in the ever-unfolding, like day by day, the plot thickens, the ever-unfolding tale of treachery, treason, deceit, obfuscation, omission, and breach of constitutional and federal constitutional law and federal statute by a host of people in several key departments in Obama's government, the DOJ, the FBI, and the State Department. Here's what we learned just this week. I'm going to make this brief. Number one, we learned that Strzok, remember Strzok and his girlfriend Page, both of them married, cavorting and planning all sorts of nasty anti-Trump stuff, both during the campaign and after he's elected, and then getting the nonsense Mueller investigation going and the insurance policy they talked about with McKay. Those guys, those people. We now find out in texts released just yesterday that they were also kind of best buddies with Guterres. He happens to be a federal judge, and he happens to be a FISA court judge. And the text messages of the two lovebirds, the treasonous lovebirds, are all about how to influence this judge. He also happens to be the judge that accepted the guilty plea from Flynn, who Strzok, even though he's obviously hugely pro-Hillary and hugely anti-Trump, that Strzok even said in his report had not lied to the FBI, but that somehow Mueller indicted for lying to the FBI, that this judge, who was Strzok's friend, accepted the plea on. And then we learn that this judge recused himself from Flynn's case 1 week after accepting the plea. I didn't know that before. That's just coming out. I mean, wow, I can't wait to read this IG's report. I can't wait to see some of these people put on the hot seat under oath. I can't wait to see all these people indicted. You know, poor Flynn. I'm sure Trump's going to pardon him as a last resort, but, you know, unfortunately, Flynn now has a great judge that took over from this recused judge, and he's ordered Mueller and his merry team of bad Democratic cops who are assisting in his so-called investigation to produce all exculpatory evidence in the Flynn matter. In other words, you know, like the communications of Strzok, who interviewed Flynn, who said Flynn didn't lie, you know, that kind of stuff, which Flynn didn't know about when he decided to plead guilty. And this judge is kind of tough, and he's come down on these boys hard before. So we're going to see some interesting stuff develop there. And then, of course, we had Hillary over in India basically calling us deplorables again and, you know, misogynistic and telling all the white women in the United States who voted for Trump that they were brainwashed by their sons, by their husbands, by those nasty men. I mean, you know, you can't make this stuff up. And then she told this crowd that, you know, I not only should I have won the election, but really I won the election because I got all the important votes. I got the votes where there's 2/3 of the GDP of the country. I'm not even sure that's true, folks, but let's assume it is just for the sake of this part of this broadcast. So 1/3 of the GDP of this country, which is about $20 trillion a year, give or take, 1/3 is about, you know, $7 trillion, $6 or $7 trillion. And that would be the third that you, and assuming she's correct, and I believe she's wrong, but that would be the third that you and me and the Bubbas and, you know, the red states and the flyover, that's a third we put into the kitty. $6 trillion, just to give you kind of a feel for things, $6 trillion is larger than almost any other economy in the world except for like 3 or 4. But our $6 trillion doesn't count, folks. Our votes don't count. Our ideas don't count. Our values don't count. Our conservatism doesn't count. Our love of and respect for the Constitution doesn't count. And basically, we don't count and we should all go away and die. And on that last phrase, we should all go away and die, if you think I'm kidding, you wait for the last half of this show. That's all I'm going to say for now. And then, of course, we had McCabe getting fired. And listen, rah, rah, rah. The two interesting things, well, there's many interesting things about McCabe getting fired, but I learned something that I didn't know. That in addition to all his other scurrilous investigations that he threw in favor of whoever he liked, McCabe was in charge of the investigation in Benghazi. Huh. Imagine that. You know, that kind of puts some time dot lines in place for me. So let's see. Obviously, Benghazi was a total Hillary screw-up from stem to stern. She didn't give the ambassador the security he demanded hundreds of times. She didn't send help when it was needed. She let Americans die. Then she lies about the video, along with Rhodes and Obama and the rest of the crew. And everything is whitewashed. It all kind of goes away, except your erstwhile reporter told you it would never go away. And, as I've informed you, that investigation in Congress is what unearthed the fact that Hillary was had an illegal email, non-gov address, and her server. And that server, think about this now, that server and the illegal emails was the sham investigation done by Comey and McCabe and Strzok, which has now led us to the point of yesterday, with McCabe being fired and highly likely a second prosecutor finally, and equally highly likely criminal charges against McCabe and Comey and Strzok and a host of others. It all flowed from Benghazi, folks. I told you, go back and listen to the show. I told you Benghazi was a huge deal that would never, ever go away. I got laughed at. You should see the emails. And, you know, if you remember the rest of the press, even the right side press, if you will, were saying, oh, well, that's done. You know, that's over with. No. Benghazi will never be over with. This is like the revenge of the dead. And what a sweet revenge it must be for them, being forsaken by their country, by these treacherous people who put ideology, both left and Islam, above Americans. Shame on them. Shame on them. And then lied about it to their families. Shame, shame, shame on them. Despicable and disgusting. But now, the snowball, the little tiny fleck of snow that the Benghazi investigation uncovered is becoming an avalanche that's going to consume these people. And McCabe, I'm telling you, is the first. I was about the only voice out there. I was even before Hannity, telling you that when all this dust settles, this is a year and a half ago, that it's going to be a complete reversal, that the Democrats will rue the day they ever mention the words special counsel, an investigation. And we're here now, folks. I'm here to tell you we're here now. And it's all because of Benghazi. And I find out this week that McCabe was the FBI guy in charge of the Benghazi investigation. Now, you know, that also leads me to the next thing, because a couple years after that, or actually a year after the Benghazi investigation is supposedly swept under the rug, McCabe's wife runs for a state legislature seat in Virginia. And she's given $700,000 for her campaign by a PAC, political action company, run by McAuliffe, who is like the closest buddies in the whole world by Clinton. And I bet if you trace that money back, it came from the Clinton Foundation. I'd bet you this ranch on it. And that $700,000 went to McCabe's wife. McCabe did not disclose it. That's another thing we learned this week. McCabe did not disclose this obvious conflict of interest because the money came in just the year or so after the Benghazi deal that he was in charge of suddenly wrapped up. And during at the inception of and into the first third of the Clinton email and server scandal investigation, which he also ran. And his wife gets $700,000, as I've told you before, although none of the other media is mentioning this. Virginia is one of those few states where campaign funds not expended don't have to stay in the campaign coffers. Guess where they go? Oh, yeah, the candidate. To the extent you don't spend money that you raised in your campaign, you get to keep it. Ah, I'd so like to see McCabe's bank accounts. In fact, I'd like to see everybody's bank accounts. And you know what the common thread is going to be, folks? It's going to be in one way, shape, or form, no matter how they tried to launder it, it's going to be Hillary Clinton dirty money. Because Hillary Clinton corrupts everything she touches. You've heard of the Midas touch? Where he touched things and they turned to gold. Remember that? That fable? That old Greek, I think it's a Greek story. Well, this is the Hillary touch. Everything she turns dark and ugly and corrupt. As you've now learned, Mr. McCabe. Haven't you? The other interesting thing I found, one of the really other interesting things I found in the McCabe firing was the statement that he made. And it was made kind of late last night. It was like 9 or 10. It is now, what time is it? 3 in the morning on Saturday morning. See what I do for you folks? Get myself out of bed so early to bring you all this good stuff. Actually, I haven't gone to bed yet. How's that? Anyway, McCabe's statement. Now remember, he's trying to play himself off as the FBI guy, you know, he's straight and narrow and he follows all the rules and he didn't do anything wrong and he's just a really good guy and he really worked so hard for 20 years and it's so unfair that he's not getting his $1.8 million of taxpayers' money. McCabe, I'm going to make it in a nutshell. Hopefully the producers have it here on the site, probably under treason. His statement basically says, I'll boil it down for you. Number one, that he's a victim, that he's a subject of political persecution, that it's all Donald Trump's fault because he tweeted about him and said he wanted him fired and blah, 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 blah. And that now we know why we need this special counsel. So the guy who was trying to tell us how straight and narrow he was and how unbiased he was comes off his friggin' handle tonight and comes out with this highly political, venomous statement against Trump. Trump is trying to undermine not only him and his family and his credibility, so his testimony on the special counsel is going to be undermined, but in addition, he's attacking the FBI and the intelligence agencies, and, you know, I mean, you have to read the statement. I read it four times and went, is this guy, like, in the ozone or what? He just blew his entire story. Because this is how, this was like Andrew McCabe in a fit of passion, suddenly spilling his truth. And the other interesting thing about his statements off the record, and it was reported on, I've read it over several internet sources and reported on several TV shows, was he said, and if I'm going down, meaning if he gets criminal charges, I'm bringing everybody with me. Huh. Let me see. I didn't do anything wrong, but if I get criminally charged, then I'm going to bring everybody who was involved down with me. That kind of sounds like an admission that something really bad, a bunch of bad stuff happened, and that he was only part of it. And if he's going to be punished for the bad stuff he did, then he's going to make sure everybody else who did bad stuff is going to be punished too. In other words, exactly the opposite of what he was saying, I didn't do anything wrong. I take that as an admission, yeah, that a lot went wrong and there were a lot of people involved. If there's nobody else involved, there's nobody else to bring down, is there? And if you didn't do anything wrong, then you can't bring down anybody because nothing wrong happened. Just kind of Wyoming common sense. All right. We then learned this week that Fusion GPS, their first stint for Democratic campaigns was not the Hillary Clinton campaign, who hired them, who then hired a British agent, Christopher Steele, who then hired Russians to manufacture nonsense, who then, in conjunction with Strzok and Comey and McCabe and Brennan, pretended that this was an intelligence document, and then brought the document to a FISA court, lied to the court by representation and omission, and got a FISA warrant, which allowed them to spy not only on Carter Page, but since it goes back 18 months and includes every email or communication he has with any other person, and as I reported to you, I think about 2 months ago, when I figured it out, because remember I was talking to you about the fact that how could you have 300 unmaskings from information and transcripts that obviously have to somehow in one way, shape, or form include 300 other people if you just have a FISA warrant on Carter Page. And I surmised back in that show, gee, either there were a lot more FISA warrants or these FISA warrants are really huge, broad things once granted. And what we've learned is they're huge, broad things. If Carter Page sent an email to Joe Blow in the Trump campaign or anywhere 18 months before they started the FISA surveillance the first time, there were four times that they pulled these frauds on the court, in October of 2016, guess what? Every person that he communicated with, they now have the right, under the FISA warrant, without getting another warrant, to go into that person's communications. And then they get to go into the communications of that person had with any other person. Forget Carter Page. They basically get to go backwards 18 months and forward indefinitely. I guess what I'm trying to boil down in a nutshell for you. Into three layers or three tranches of people who are communicating with one another. So that means that their first FISA warrant was in October of 16. That puts us back to somewhere in the spring of 2015, right before Trump announced he was running for president. And it goes all the way forward to now. So we're talking about a period of almost 3.5 years. And literally, if you follow this to its logical conclusion, folks, thousands, not hundreds, thousands of people's communications of every shape, way, and form from one illegally obtained FISA warrant obtained on the basis of an illegally constructed, you can't have foreign agents involved in your government or your elections, an illegally constructed, completely false and unverified document that through a conspiracy of the intelligence agencies, the DOJ, and the FBI was made to look official that Obama knew full well about, along with Susan Rice and Ben Rhodes and the rest of the corrupt cabal up there, to illegally spy, to illegally present to a FISA court, to obtain an illegal warrant, to illegally spy on thousands, not just a few, not just Carter Page, thousands of people over a 3.5 year period, and then illegally unmask 300 of them in the days leading up to the election. I mean, it blows your mind. It blows your mind. But I digress. This little nugget I'm about to share with you is that the first Democratic people, candidates, whatever, to hire Fusion GPS was none other than Obama himself. He hired Fusion GPS, we have learned this week, to do op-ed research and compile dirt and nonsense on Mitt Romney. Huh. What do you want to bet that, never mind. I mean, that's old history. But the fact that Barack Obama first brought Fusion GPS and made them a paid consultant of the Democratic Party, and Fusion GPS is now in it up to their necks in this treason by Obama appointees at the FBI, Justice, and State. There is no coincidence here, folks. None. None. The other thing we learned this week is that Steele himself, the British retired MI6 agent, foreign agent, Steele himself, contrary to what the FBI told the FISA court, said that he had not verified the dossier and that he personally believed that it was only 50-50 true. This is the guy who wrote it, right? Yeah. And that he couldn't reveal his sources. You know why, folks? The sources don't exist. This is all nonsense. We also find out a little bit more. I brought this to you last week. But yes, the Clinton Foundation is under full-throated criminal investigation being run by the Arkansas FBI field office. I kind of like that. And then finally, we find out that Rosenstein, whom I've been telling you for a long time, is a key dirty cop player in this whole deal. The assistant attorney general who hired Mueller like the day after he interviewed with Trump for FBI director. Rosenstein is getting more and more difficult to deal with in terms of Congress getting documents. All the stuff that's coming out right now is not coming out through the DOJ or the FBI. It's coming out through the IG. Who, by the way, you got to love this, Elijah Cummings. Don't we all love Elijah? Oh, Elijah, you wonderful alt-left Democrat, you. That Elijah Cummings insisted conduct the investigation that the IG is now conducting. Ha! Imagine that. Except it's not quite coming out like old Elijah thought it would. So sad. But the FBI will not. And this is all Rosenstein, folks. Remember he ran up to Paul Ryan prior to that stuff coming out that was the foundation of the Republican congressional investigation memo. He went up there with Michael, with Ray from the FBI to plead with Paul Ryan. They didn't want to give him the stuff, and Paul said, you will give us the stuff. Good for you, Paul. But now we find out that because of Rosenstein, the FBI will not expedite the release of documents about the secret meetings between Comey and Obama. I think they're kind of key, don't you think? Or any of the stuff about Comey holding secret Oval Office meetings with Obama and Rhodes and Rice and some other folks on January 5th, 2017. The meeting that Rice, if you remember, we learned last week, wrote a memo to herself on the day of Trump's inauguration, 2 weeks after this January 5th meeting, that said, we did everything by the book, and the president said do everything by the book, and we're all by the book, and I'm just writing this to remind myself that we're by the book. Okay, Susan, we got you. You bet. That's not too suspicious. Quote, by the way, this information that Judicial Watch trying to get, the Congress trying to get, the rest of these text messages between Strzok and Page, the text messages of Comey and McKay, I mean, a wealth of information. They're being told, at Rosenstein's direction by the FBI, that the information, remember, this is Obama now, Obama's involvement in all of this, is not, I quote, a matter of widespread and exceptional media interest in which there exist possible questions about the government's integrity which affects public confidence. That was by David Hardy, by the way, the section chief for the FBI's Record Information Dissemination section. On February 26th in a letter. Imagine that. The other people we find out were at, this was actually last week, but I'm going to tell you about it this week. The other people that we find out were at this mysterious January 5th meeting to discuss the dossier and the Russians and what not to tell Trump about their Russian stuff was Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. Huh. Vice President Joe Biden, and of course, our good friend Susan Rice. We also found out in the last week that the Australian diplomat, the press has been calling him an Australian diplomat, who just happened to run into Papadopoulos, the 28-year-old that Trump never met, that never went to any meetings or whatever, that supposedly was somehow on the Trump campaign, that he ran into Papadopoulos at some bar in London, and that Papadopoulos was telling him about all the stuff that Trump's had going with the Russians. He has no recordings. He has no proof. It's just his testimony. Well, we find out that this same Australian diplomat, which the press had been talking about until the rest of the story must have reached their news desks, God, he worked closely with the Clinton Foundation. In fact, contributed $25 million to the Clinton Foundation. Imagine that. More Hillary funny, dirty money. And another witness down the tubes. Let's see, what else did we learn? Oh, yeah. That Rosenstein signed off on, yet again, he's done it several times, expanding Mueller's authority to investigate to now include Trump's business organizations. Now, I haven't figured out what the building of Trump Tower might have to do with Russian collusion in the election, but I guess we'll find out, huh? Do I have any other goodies to tell you here? By the way, Comey lied about that meeting under oath, that meeting of January 5th. Did you know that? Comey claimed, let me read this to you. Comey claimed in June 8th, 2017 testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, he only had two face-to-face meetings with the president in which they were alone. I spoke alone with President Obama twice in person and never on the phone. Once in 2015 discussed law enforcement policy issues, and a second time, briefly, for him to say goodbye in late 2016. Jim. Oh, Jim, tell me it ain't so, Jimmy. Did you forget that January 5th meeting with everybody up there in the Oval Office going over the dossier? You know, the one with Rhodes and all the rest of the folks there? Huh? Oh, Jimmy. Is this kind of like lying to the FBI? Is this like lying like you accused Flynn of doing? Wow. I'll tell you what, it just makes you sick to your stomach, does it not? We also have some more incompetence by the FBI, folks. Some poor kid in high school was stabbed to death by a Muslim kid who decided he was going to go jihad. And I believe it was in Minneapolis. This was last week. And we find out that just like Parkland, and just like the Pulse nightclub, and just like San Bernardino, and just like the Arkansas recruiting station, and I can go all the way down the list, I've given it to you before, the FBI was warned about this kid's propensity, this Muslim kid's propensity for violence, his threats to carry out jihad, the whole nine yards, and they did nothing. And an American lost their life because of it. But, you know, the press didn't cover it at all. But I'm not done with the FBI yet tonight because it's kind of, you know, they're kind of the corrupt gift that keeps on giving right now. And I'm not talking about the boots on the ground agents, the huge majority of which I'm sure are terrific men and women. I'm talking about the corrupt top of this organization. I mean corrupt. Personally appointed corruption by Barack Obama. That's what they are. Let's go to Las Vegas, shall we? So Las Vegas is probably one of the, I think it's the greatest mass casualty event in the history of the United States, other than, you know, 9/11. And it's been 5 months now, folks, and we don't know squat. And the FBI isn't telling us squat. Well, what came out on March 14th was an article. And it was by Pamela Geller, who, as you know, is a pretty active anti-Islamist gal. Let me go. If you remember, ISIS took credit for that hit. My theory at the time, you can go back and listen to the show. I was virtually alone in the press in promulgating the theory, was that this was really this horrific marriage, this unholy alliance, manifesting itself in a huge terror attack of the alt-left and Islam. They did find Antifa and alt-left and anti-Trump stuff in his room. This was definitely a rally that mostly had Trump or Trump-type supporters. You know, the concert, country music concert. There was absolutely more shooters than one. I mean, the videos are still on our website. Go read them. I think I put everything under terror. I think the producers posted all the Las Vegas articles and videos and stuff under terror. Anyway, the FBI, here's what the FBI has told us. that there was, and they said this within 2 hours of the shooting. Remember this now, that there was no connection to Islamic terror, no connection to ISIS. Now, they didn't know squat 2 hours after that deal, but they knew there was no Islamic connection. And they told us that Paddock was white, and he was 64, and, you know, he wouldn't be the type of guy that you'd convert to, you convert to radical Islam. I'll remind you that Islam and radical Islam is a belief. And the last time I checked, there's no limit on age and who believes what. But here's some of the stuff that's come from the agents, leaks from the agents who are involved from various field offices in this Las Vegas investigation. Number one, MGM Resorts, that's the Mandalay Bay, along with FBI and Las Vegas Metro Police, there's leakers now beginning in all those outfits because they can't, you know, they can't, some of these guys are honest and they can't take it. Good for them. Let me quote. It's a movie script that was written after the shooting to rewrite what really happened, one FBI agent said. The investigation is an entirely different story that we are not allowed to talk about. If we do and get caught, we get fired and probably charged criminally. All right, so here's what the FBI maintains, folks. Stephen Paddock, lone gunman, mystery man, no motive, killed and injured over 500 people, blah, 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 did it all alone, etc. There's an article on the True Pundit. I've posted one of them, I believe, under terror, and you can read it for yourself. But here's what's come out in the last several weeks from these leaking sources at these various outfits, the FBI, Las Vegas Police, etc. The FBI brass, gee, who was the brass? Oh, that's right, McCabe and that whole crew. Huh, same folks. The same rotten top of that ladder at the FBI, same rotten people. FBI brass was provided with forensic evidence of multiple gunmen, but they told the agents to stand down and only focus on Paddock. Huh. They did not investigate at all, and I posted some of these videos for you folks, videos of multiple rifles being fired from Mandalay Bay from different locations. FBI brass was provided the names of persons of interest who likely assisted Paddock, but agents were instructed to not interview those individuals. The FBI agents uncovered specific evidence showing that Paddock was anti-Trump and had an affiliation with Antifa. Gee, where'd you hear that theory before, folks? But they were told not to divulge that to the public and not to follow up any leads in that regard. The agents produced evidence that Antifa and ISIS linked terrorism factors were likely working together on this event. FBI brass, again, by the way, this included full identities of some of the suspects that had ties to both radical groups, the left and radical Islam, who were at or near the Mandalay Bay the night of the shooting. The agents were specifically instructed not to follow up on that investigation and to not pursue those suspects. Intelligence officials approached the FBI and Las Vegas police with external evidence, I'm reading to you now, that Paddock was only one member of an organized terror cell, which included as many as five gunmen who planned to fire from the Mandalay Bay. They were told to not investigate further, nor to reveal or divulge the evidence. FBI brass was provided with forensic evidence that Paddock's death was not a suicide. As you know, the FBI still now maintains a suicide with two bullet holes. I mean, how do you kill yourself once and then pull? I haven't figured that out yet. Two trigger pulls, one suicide. By the same guy. Wow. I guess if he was a cat, he could do it 9 times. There was an ISIS-linked businessman from Turkey that the field agent's investigation kind of uncovered, who was actually in Las Vegas at the time of the shooting. The agents were instructed not to follow up nor to pursue intelligence leads showing possible links to the massacre. FBI and certain intelligence officials think that Paddock and associates chose the country music festival because it was Trump supporters. Quote, FBI agents said they were instructed to keep that key motive quiet too, unquote. The agents were told not to get the videos from the MGM. Remember, we've talked about the fact those videos have never been released, nobody's seen them? Well, that's because the FBI agents on the ground were instructed by the FBI brass to not get them. FBI agents and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosive informed the FBI upper levels that Paddock did not start buying dozens of guns. I brought this to your attention before, folks. Dozens of guns until after Trump's election. They were told to keep that fact quiet and shrouded. FBI agents followed up on the ABC News report that Paddock wired $100,000 to the Philippines shortly before the rampage. They found out the report was untrue. However, the upper levels of the FBI told them to embrace the false story, saying, quote, it helped build the narrative the Bureau was constructing about Paddock, unquote. A lot of these agents, by the way, believe, as you'll read in this article, that that story was actually planted by the upper levels of the FBI. That would include, by the way, our buddy McCabe here and others. Anyway, I think you'll find the article interesting. And, you know, at the FBI upper levels, I mean, this information is all coming from agents, from boots on the ground, who can't stand it anymore. But at the upper levels of the FBI, the corruption beat goes on and on, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. And just yesterday, we might see the beginnings of a cleansing which is really, really, really needed and which we absolutely deserve. And here we are, an hour and a half, into the show. I wanted to spend a full hour on the meat and potatoes of tactics by the left, or a few of them anyway. And we're going to be short of time. And you know, all the stuff I just covered for you, I mean, each and every tidbit is important. And each and every tidbit happened literally this week. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's times like these, I wish I was doing a show every day like Hannity. But the time just does not allow it, unfortunately. So, let's talk about our friends on the left. If you remember, last week I gave you kind of the overview. Very quickly, they want to control democracy and beat down the people's will to participate. And by the way, their knowledge to participate. That's education. We're going to get into that the week after next. You women will be particularly interested. They want to control speech. They want to control the flow of information. They want to purchase local offices, which are going to make kind of on-the-ground decisions about law interpretation. Soros is funding DAs all over the place. This is all part of their red-to-blue plan. They want to control the courts, control the judiciary. To do this, they have to control Congress. To do that, Obama and Holder have lawsuits going to redistrict 20 into 20 different states to change the complexion of the House of Representatives. They continue to divide even more so, I might add, by race, gender, age, and religion. They have an alliance with Islamists. You know, just look at Farrakhan, his statements over the last week. I'm sure you've seen it on TV. Sarsau, the radical Islamist, the Sharia law believer, the gal who leads the women marches for women's rights. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. They have a policy of avoiding personal responsibility. Take a look at the sheriff in Broward County. They follow the Alinsky playbook. Always deny, never admit, always distract. They want to change, fundamentally transform, to use Obama's words, the complexion of the nation and the electorate with immigration. They want to use that immigration as part of their plan to perpetrate voter fraud to offset the fact that their new electorate is not totally yet imported. They want to control education, which they've done a damn good job at, unfortunately. They want to create problems, folks. They don't want to solve problems. Or they want problems that now exist, immigration, gun control, blah, 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 blah. They want them to fester and not go away, a la the Democrats not getting the DACA deal done, a la the Democrats not being unwilling to talk about any common sense solutions to school safety and hardening the schools as targets as opposed to taking away your guns. By the way, disarming the American population is critical to their plan. They can't have somebody who's going to fight back. They continually lie by both representation, that's by statement, or by omission, intentionally. Just look at Adam Schiff on his TV circuit. Or Nancy Pelosi. Oh, wow. Doozy. Doozy Nancy. They want to castrate men. I mean, I think some of them would like to do it literally. But they want to do it in the figurative sense. Because the more effeminate they can make men, the less likely they'll have to deal with warriors. They want to create and maintain dependency. They want to divest America of industry and resources, which creates more dependency, which gives them more power in a more centralized government. And they want to overburden this capitalist society with financial entitlements until it collapses, the Cloward and Piven theory I've talked about many times and talked about last week. And since we're limited on time, I'm only going to hit two of these subjects in detail this morning. We're going to talk about voter fraud. Now, you have the mechanical voter fraud, which is where individual people go out and make decisions, like the Democratic precinct folks who stuff ballots, the outfits all across the country, including in Philadelphia, if you remember from Jill Klein's recount, the 160 counties that have more people on their voter registration rolls than they have voting age population in the county, 160 counties. The 100,000 illegal alien registered to vote in Pennsylvania, a key swing state, and may be involved in this PA-18 election, which is separated by 627 points. We're going to talk about that in detail. And of course, then they want to switch Congress to take advantage of their propensity for voter fraud and their importation of a new electorate by the redistricting lawsuits going on in 20 states right now, including key swing states, Ohio, Pennsylvania. It's, I mean, strategically selected states. It's all part of a plan. All this is tied together. None of this is happening independently. It's all being orchestrated. And let's talk about a little bit about illegal immigration, because it's a huge component of voter fraud, which is a huge component of controlling legislatures and Congress, which is a critical component to controlling the judiciary. It's all part of the game plan. So just in the last week, all of a sudden there's this hue and cry to abolish ICE, right? Immigration control. They want to abolish it. The Daily Caller News Foundation put out an article, in fact, on March 10th. Democrats are now thinking of making abolishing ICE a 2020 campaign issue in the presidential primary, the Democratic presidential primary. This goes right back to the fact that this party, the Democratic Party, let me adjust my microphone here a little bit, is alt-left, folks. You know, Connor Lamb is, as President Trump said, a sham. Lamb the sham. Former Hillary Clinton campaign spokesman Brian Fallon, quote, ICE operates as an unaccountable deportation force. Dems running in 2020 should campaign on ending the agency in its current form. There's a big liberal writer by the name of Jack Merkinson. And on Friday, a week ago, he slammed Harris, the senator from California, who basically said that we need ICE, but it needs to be strictly controlled. I mean, it needs to be scaled way back. That wasn't good enough for most of the Democratic Party that is now all left. So Merkinson writes, quote, not good enough, Kamala Harris. Any serious defender of undocumented people in this country would look at ICE and know that it is a cancer that needs to be excised from the U.S., pretending that the most diseased levers of state power can be molded into something better is a useless fantasy. ICE must be abolished. Anything less is not good enough. Unbelievable, boy. He goes on to say, Kamala Harris is very likely running for president in 2020. It should be a political problem for her that she is not willing to take her criticisms of ICE to their logical conclusion and call for its abolition. Anyone who decides to run, Bernie Sanders, Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, Eric Garcetti, you name it, should be asked the same question. The Nation, a left-wing publication, also a week ago Friday, put out a similar piece called It's Time to Abolish ICE. The idea of defunding ICE gained traction amongst immigrant rights groups horrified by the speed at which, under President Donald Trump, the agency has ramped up an already brutal deportation process. And then there's a bunch of donor and donor-funded groups on the left, which all of a sudden are picking up the abolish ICE, therefore be unable to enforce immigration laws rant of the left, including the Indivisible Project, the Center for Popular Democracy, the Brand New Congress. You know, all, by the way, two of the three funded by Soros. Quote, ICE is terrorizing American communities right now. They're going into schools, entering hospitals, conducting massive raids, and separating children from parents every day. We are funding these activities, and we need to use all the leverage we have to stop it. All right. Tom Homan, by the way, ICE director, his response was, quote, 9 out of every 10 aliens we arrested in the last year did have a criminal history, unquote. They don't want to know the facts. They want to keep playing this political game, put smoke and mirrors up about what ICE is really doing, unquote. Now, let's take a look at what happens when you have illegal aliens and you can inject them as a new electorate, even though an illegal new electorate that can affect races, that affects the constitution of state legislatures, which affects redistricting, which affects congressional representation, which affects judicial nominees, if you can follow all that, because that's exactly how they have it planned. So there's a lawsuit that's been filed in Pennsylvania. Okay. And this was reported in the Washington Times, when was it? Tuesday, March 6th. And I believe that it was in last week's, under voter fraud in last week's articles, or it might be in this week's articles too. From the Washington Times, quote, more than 100,000 non-citizens are registered to vote in Pennsylvania alone, according to testimony submitted Monday in a lawsuit demanding the state come clean about the extent of its problems. The Public Interest Legal Foundation, which has identified similar non-citizen voting problems in studies of Virginia and New Jersey, said Pennsylvania officials have admitted non-citizens that non-citizens have been registering and voting in the state for decades. But state officials have stonewalled PILF, that's the Public Interest Legal Foundation, requests for access to the data that could expose the problem. By the way, it is federal law that that information is public and has to be provided, just so you know, folks. Quote, for months, Pennsylvania bureaucrats have concealed facts about non-citizens registering and voting. That ends today. This is by Christian Adams, who was the former DOJ attorney who left and formed this outfit. Pennsylvania officials, by the way, would not respond to questions posed about the lawsuit. Gee, I wonder. I wonder why. By the way, the 100,000 number comes from testimony by Philadelphia Registration Commissioner Al Schmidt, who said that a glitch in, quote, in the State Motor Vehicle Bureau systems that prompted non-citizens to register to vote, unquote. That's the Moto Voto law that Bill Clinton got passed, folks. And who's in favor of illegal immigration and amnesty? Oh, that's right, Hillary Clinton. Must be a coincidence. Anyway, PILF has been out trying to gather its own information until it gets its requests, which it's suing to get, answered by Pennsylvania. They ran into one person who said he was not a citizen. He said, however, he was registered as a Democrat and had voted in three separate elections, including most recently 2016. Another woman that they found had her registration canceled in 2006 because she was an illegal alien, but she re-registered to vote twice and cast ballots in two different elections and is still active in the voting registration system. Then they found another woman. She voted in 2008, 2012, had her registration canceled in 2014 because she was an illegal alien, and then re-registered and voted in 2016, registered as a Democrat, of course. The federal, remember Bill Clinton, Howard and Cliven standing behind him signing the Moto Voto deal? You can Google it up and see the picture. I mean, that was really the beginning of this massive illegal alien voter fraud in the United States, and it was intentional, folks, intentional. The federal motor voter law, I'm reading, requires states to make voter registration available at motor vehicle bureaus, but also pushes states to try and keep their voter rolls clean. Under the law, private parties can sue to press states to perform the cleansing, unquote. That's what's happening with this lawsuit. Anyway, if you kind of go through this article, which once again is either last week or this week or both weeks under voter fraud, there's a wealth of other information on it. It'll just curl your hair. And not only that, this is just one state, folks. There's similar problems, at least in New Jersey, which doesn't matter much because it's blue, but in Virginia, which is a swing state. Do you remember when these immigrants were coming in, the refugees were coming in, and they were being, we were paying, because of Obama, to fly them without disclosing where they were being flown to? Well, they're being flown to these swing states, folks. That's where they're being flown. Why do you think 1,000 Somalis would be flown into remote hamlets in Maine? How do you think those 100,000 illegal aliens got to Pennsylvania? This is a concerted effort by the left not only to promote illegal aliens and eventually to get them citizenship and quote-unquote legal voting, but to use them as voters in the meantime to swing states, particularly after they are redistricted by their current lawsuits. And by the way, the more they control the judiciary, the more this is likely to work. If they control the judiciary, as they do like the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, they will get redistricting done such that they will swing the number of seats that go to Republicans to Democrats, particularly aided and abetted by mechanical, actual, and illegal alien voter fraud. And once they control Congress, they can appoint judges. Judges. And that's one of the reasons that in the Senate right now, the Democratic Senate is doing everything it can to slow down the appointment of appeals of federal appeals courts and federal district court judges by Trump. This is all tied in. This is all part of one big strategy. Let me give you some facts on this because it's kind of blood-curdling, actually. So even though Trump has appointed 12 appeals court judges more than any other president. Only two others came close, 11 and 11, Bush and one other one. And a number of federal court judges. When he came into office in January 2017, there were 108 vacancies on the federal bench. Even though he has been rapidly moving to fill seats despite Democratic obstruction, now there's 178 current and known future vacancies for federal judgeships, both appeals court and federal district courts. He has filled 153 of those vacancies are district court judges. 25 are appeals court judges. And listen, bear in mind that the vast majority of cases are decided by judges at the federal court level or at the federal appeals court level. There's only about 70 or 80 cases a year that get to the Supreme Court, folks. So the Supreme Court is a great backstop for the really, 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 really big items. But a lot of this stuff never reaches the Supreme Court. They simply can't hear all the cases. The lower courts are critical. Think about these that moron in California and that other moron in Hawaii that has basically upended, what, the DACA deal, the travel ban, the immigration stuff for a year. Obama appointees rewriting the law from the bench. I mean, the hell with the Constitution. You can't abolish DACA even though DACA was established illegally. Say what? Let's see. Obama does an executive order illegally establishing DACA, but Trump can't do an executive order de-establishing the original illegal order. Okay, I got it. I didn't even go to Harvard Law School. I could figure that out. Phew, man. To make sure Trump fills as little vacancies as possible while the rest of their red-to-blue plan is put in motion with redistricting and illegal aliens and immigration and changes in the complexion of red and swing states and voter fraud and a host of other tactics, just the ones we're talking about this morning. The Democrats are doing everything they can to slow down appointments, which are for life, to these benches. And the way they're doing it is the Democrats are requiring 30 hours of debate for every nominee, even if they've come out of the Judiciary Committee with a unanimous recommendation for appointment. Quote, at this rate, it will take the president more than two terms to fill all the vacancies, unquote. Which is exactly what the Democrats want. They want to slow down filling these lifelong appointments by conservative judges until they wrest control back based on the rest of their plan, and they can make the lifelong appointments of leftist judges, folks. I mean, do you understand what they're doing here? And they're using all sorts, I mean, as they run out of reasons, they're using any reason that comes to them, including their most fun reasons, misogynistic, Islamophobic, racist, not diverse, etc., etc. There's a guy by the name of Marvin Quattlebaum, terrific juror, who's been nominated by Trump to one of the appeals courts. Our friend Chucky Schumer, good old Chucky. He's complaining that the guy's a white guy, so there's not enough diversity in Trump's picks. Quote, the nomination of Marvin Quattlebaum speaks to the overall lack of diversity in President Trump's selections for the federal judiciary. Quattlebaum replaces not one, but two scuttled Obama nominees who were African American. Really. By the way, Quattlebaum got confirmed 69-28 shortly thereafter. Schumer, according to Schumer, 83% of Trump's confirmed nominees were male and 92% were white. That, quote, that represents the lowest share of non-white candidates in three decades, unquote. I mean, heaven forbid we pick the best judges. You know, I mean, wow. Unbelievable. So there's a lot of seats to fill. It's key that a Republican, particularly Trump, because he has really, really good conservative judiciary picks, fill them. And the Democrats are trying to slow things down so they can re-wrest control back through all these other nefarious activities, which is part of their overall strategy, the red to blue strategy. And one of the things they're going to do is they're going to be using these activist judges. They're going to be using these activist judges to do all sorts of crazy crap. Let me give you an example. So going back to this, to the nomination process, just to give you a feel for where this is at. There's been 9 presidents since 1949. And where there's delays in nominations, the Senate has to hold, to make it simple, a vote called a cloture vote. The 9 presidents prior to Trump, the Senate only had to hold 7 cloture votes. 7. Since 1949, up to the time of Trump, for executive and judicial branch nominees in a president's first year of office. In Trump's first year of office, the Democrats have forced 19 such votes. 19. Almost 3 times the amount of votes in the 70 years prior to Trump. And 46 cloture votes on executive branch nominees. You know, there's still 174, or is it 274, one or the other, positions, key positions. You know, like second or third in command positions of various agencies, departments, staff openings in the White House, in the executive branch, that the Democrats have slow walked. It's one of the reasons that the State Department, for instance, isn't fully staffed. That other aspects of Trump's executive, his administration is not staffed. It's because of this obstruction and slow walking by the Democrats. The less staff he has, the less he can do. The less he can do, the more they can do when they get control back. Right? The red to blue plan. I could call it several other things, but that's what they call it. They, quote, Elizabeth Slattery, she's a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Quote, they, the Democratic senators, are not saying it's the wrong nominee. They are simply running out the clock. A cloture vote on a judge passed 95-1, but they still demanded 30 hours of debate. Americans should care a lot about lower courts, because for most cases, an appeals court is the end of the road. The Supreme Court only decides about 70 cases per year, unquote, i.e. what I was telling you. All right. To give you an idea of some of the things that they're going to be pulling in the future, if their plan works, if Trump doesn't get all these judicial appointments done, which would be great, would help a lot, would give us some margin of safety in this crazy battle for the heart of the republic that we are engaged in right now, for our sakes and the sake of our children's children. In addition to the lawsuits to redistrict, in addition to the lawsuits to try and upend voter ID laws so that obviously there can be more voter fraud, so that they can turn swing states and swing districts. I mean, it's all tied in, folks. There was just a lawsuit filed. I believe it was, I think it was the last week of February, the first week of March. This lawsuit was filed by a Harvard University law professor. His name is Lawrence Lessig. And by the way, he is like, Stalin should have had him as a staff attorney, okay? He's filed in 4 states, charging that the winner-take-all element of how states divvy up their electoral college votes is not constitutional. Never mind that the Constitution expressly allows each state to determine how to allocate its electoral votes, either winner-take-all or allocated. The District of Columbia and 48 states use winner-take-all, and have, by the way, for 230 or so years. There's only 2 states in the United States, so you know, that allocate their electoral votes based on a percentage of the vote. One is Maine, and one is Nebraska. In the last election, if you remember, I believe one electoral vote went to Trump, and two went to Hillary. Nebraska, they all went to Trump. Quote, under the winner-take-all system, U.S. citizens have been denied their constitutional rights to an equal vote in presidential elections. This is David Boies, by the way, who is the same attorney who represented Al Gore. Remember the county of the Chads in Broward County, Florida? Boy, Broward County. Wow. And that was in 2000, if you remember, the Hanging Chads. You remember that whole nonsense? Quote, this is a clear violation of the principle of one person, one vote. By the way, there's been lawsuits filed on this in the past, folks, but they've all failed because they were heard in front of conservative judges. Lawsuits like this in the future will not fail if they're heard in front of liberal judges. Do you understand how this all ties in? One big master plan. Brilliant and interconnected and moving forward full press in many different directions. Here's what the Constitution says, by the way. And let's see what you put on your law hat and tell me if you come up with the same conclusion as I do. Quote, each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors, equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress, unquote. Kind of sounds like it leaves it up to the state legislatures to me, which, of course, is why they're also trying to get back state legislative seats through redistricting and voter fraud. Once again, all ties in, folks. All ties in. Now, one of the things Trump has up his sleeve, I've talked about it 2 months ago, is that they want to not count illegal aliens in the census anymore because it's population that drives congressional districts. It's population that drives how many congressional seats a state has. And it's population that drives a host of other important aspects of governance, including how much federal money flows to a state. Now, you can see why the left would hate that. But you could also see that if Trump follows through on this, and I really hope he does, how this would at least, for a time period, equalize some of these steps Holder, Obama, and other lefties, like this Lawrence Leffig from Harvard, it would undermine their activities for a while, at least. According to Ballot Access News, the biggest impediment to overturning the winner-take-all system is Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. That's the one I just read you. All right. And, of course, they're pointing... it's unbelievable. So they're pointing to the fact that it's time to do this now because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote and Donald Trump still won the Electoral College and blah, 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 blah. And if you go back and read the Federalist Papers, folks, the Electoral College system, which is a brilliant system, was devised to give small states an equal say in the governance of this country like big states. Otherwise, New York and California and Florida and Texas would pretty much control how this country is run. And that's a scary prospect. So the Electoral College kind of equalizes the little guys with the big guys in a lot of different ways. It's a brilliant system, and it's a true representative republic, which is what we are. That is what it's based on. There's an outfit called National Popular Vote. By the way, what's really ironic, after talking about immigration, illegal voting, illegal alien registration, etc., this morning, how many of those 3 million votes that Hillary supposedly beat Trump by in the popular vote, considering that 2.5 million of them came from two counties in Los Angeles, how many of those votes do you think were illegal, fraudulent? multiple by illegal aliens. I would bet those and more, folks. Those and more. So let's see. Once again, the left breaks the law to get illegal aliens here, breaks the law to keep them here, breaks the law by registering the vote, breaks the law by allowing them to vote, then counts their tally and uses the press as its foil in saying that our candidate got more popular vote, therefore we need to change the electoral college system on how a president is elected and screw all the states in the middle of the country. It's kind of like the shooting down there in Parkland. The federal government failed, the state government failed, the county government failed, the municipality failed, the government officials on the ground, like that incredibly coward sheriff's deputy and the other deputies that were ordered to stand down, failed. But because of their failures, all the people in flyover country ought to give up their guns. I mean, the left is masterful at this. And it's part of that follow the Alinsky rules element of their tactics handbook, if you will. Heritage Foundation legal expert Hans von Spakovsky, quote, "In creating the basic architecture of the American government, the founders struggled to satisfy each state's demand for greater representation while attempting to balance popular sovereignty against the risks posed to the minority from majoritarian rule," unquote. All right. It looks to me like we're out of time once again. It's unbelievable. I didn't cover half of what I wanted to cover in this show. Next week's show, we're gonna start it off the same way. I got a really good story that I've been working on for you, by the way, next week. I mean, a real story. Tell me a story, read, that you're really going to like. And we're going to be going over how the left uses terrorism to advance their agenda. We're going to be talking about how the left tries to control information, speech, words, and platforms, and what they are doing in concert, and I will give you the dots. I mean, they're irrefutable. What they're doing in concert with the FANGs, the big tech companies, Microsoft, Apple, Google, and several of the others, to control the information that you see, the information that you hear, the information that you read, and your access to the information. It's going on right now. In fact, this website, this radio show, was taken down by one of the FANGs for a two-day period this past week. I mean, we had all sorts of emails. Can't get the show. Your page is coming up 404. It wasn't us, folks. And we're up in hallowed company because they are attacking some huge conservative outfits. And while we have a pretty damn good reach, we're not one of the huge guys. But I guess we're creating enough of a stir, or maybe they just don't like cowboys from Wyoming because we were subject to one of their attacks this week. The tech guys from the various stations got it handled and did a great job, but we were down for 2 days. I mean, you couldn't listen to this show. You couldn't call up the website. You couldn't do squat. In fact, I was surprised to see the Facebook page still functioning. They must have forgot that. So we're going to be going over those elements of the left's tactical game plan next week. And if I have time, we're going to go over education because it's huge. It's really important. And I got some to tell you what's going on in our schools in terms of the left having infiltrated the educational system with radical alt-left teachers who believe their mission is to teach agenda and not math, science, reading, writing, and arithmetic, will curl your hair. You'll probably want to pull your kids out of school. And you know what? Might not be a bad idea. And of course, we will be also talking about next week whatever the hell crazy stuff happens in the week upcoming. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of it because with this McCabe firing and his threat to, if I go down, I'm bringing everybody down around me. Oh, it's going to get really interesting. And you know who the first person in the media to tell you that this was going to happen was? That's right. Your little old hayseed from Wyoming. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.